Blog Talk Radio.
I'm terribly sorry, sir, but your credit card
your
has been
declined. Your unemployment benefits ran out two weeks
what
ago.
What do you mean I'm overdrawn?
2 weeks ago.
I still have checks left.
Two weeks ago.
Too much month left over at the end of the money? Bad credit holding you back? Want to become a real estate investor but haven't won the lottery? Learn how to fix your credit. Get out of debt and build true financial independence with real estate in 2 hours a week. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She'll show you how, without winning the lottery or working 10 jobs. And here's your host, Heather Wagenhall.
Listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I am she, your hostess with the financial mostest, and I am so excited for this week because we are on our way, so to speak, with the Keys to Riches Financial Wellness Series. Welcome, one and all. Thank you for tuning in for this Saturday, January 8th. We are broadcasting live from the HQ Real Estate and Investment Offices right here in Scottsdale, Arizona. And this Saturday and every Saturday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, we broadcast the Unlock Your Wealth show and talk about crisis management and financial wellness tools designed to help everyone manage their finances and attitudes for the dual purpose of achieving immediate financial wellness today and begin the path to creating financial independence for you and your family's future. And we do this each and every Saturday, 1 week at a time, one key from the Keys to Riches Financial Wellness Series at a time. And this week's key, our second key, is take action, make assessment. And last week, we started out with our acceptance and affirmation. And it was important for us to acknowledge where we were, and then make the commitment to move forward to change that. Because until we acknowledge exactly where we are, how can we possibly move forward to correct something we don't believe is wrong or not working for us? So we began last week, and this week we pick up where we left off, and we're going to take some action now that we've made these decisions and started affirming our success. And we are going to do that with a couple of different guests this week. We've got Kenneth Rubenstein joining us. He is an international asset protection specialist and author of the Prosperity Plan. Laura Forting will also be joining us. She has 10 steps to beating the odds and creating extraordinary wealth. Now, in addition to that, we have some incredible minutes on your money articles, a millionaire minute segment not to be forgotten, as well as our trivia question and always our chat room moderated by the ever-popular effervescent program director, Elena. She will be in there taking your answers for the trivia question. She will also be stimulating conversation with guests who are dropping by to visit the show. And if you have questions and are fearful of calling in live at 718-508-9002, you are welcome to chat in, and Elena will send me your questions via the miracles of modern technology, and we will do our best to get you the answers that you need. If we can't address them on air, stay tuned, and we will address them offline with you. So we don't want to leave you hanging without addressing your questions, but we do want to answer them for you. So if we can't make it into the show, we will make it regardless. Now, this week, Our trivia question is, and for those of you joining us for the first time, our trivia questions are always based on a previous show, so regular listeners have a better chance of winning fabulous prizes, like books from our previous show guests, my books personalized to you or to someone you care to give it to, financial coaching, credit report review, the list goes on, and we also have two tickets to the upcoming Top Gun Academy training, sales training. So that, I think, is in March, and I will be speaking at that event. So we have a couple of tickets for that, too. So I'm pretty stoked about that. So we always base our question on a previous show, and this past midweek update, we talked about healthy foods under a buck. So if you can come up with one of those foods on our list, listy list, and you call in, chat in, or email in, you could possibly win one of those fabulous prizes. So 718-508-9002 is the telephone number. The chat room, if you're listening from our Blog Talk Radio show page, is just click into the chat room. Hop in there, and Elena would be happy to take your answer. Or if you're listening live from our website at unlockyourwealth.com and streaming, you can email in to win to trivia@uywradio.com. trivia@uywradio.com. Good luck, everyone. We have so much more in store coming up for you, minutes on your money and all of that good stuff. But first, we need to take a moment and hear from our fabulous sponsors. So stay tuned. We've got so much more in store coming up for you on Hello Wagon Hall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I am she, and we'll have more coming up next.
Hey, this is Coca Brown from the hit radio show, The Truth with Coca Brown, on HollywoodOutlaws.com radio. And you're listening to me on Heather Wagonhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Hi, it's Marty Logan here from the Top Gun Sales Academy. You know, one thing I've learned over the years is that the most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Naturally, Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, and Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside. They knew they could easily become. Truly, financial coaching could be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. That toll-free number again is 1-866-966-9420, or simply visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, industries.com. Like, go there, totally!
Even in today's economy, I, Count Dracula, have had to foreclose on my castle. But because of Heather Wagonhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, I have not only reacquired my castle, but I have opened a resort for the undead. Tune in to Heather Wagonhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She's the only one not trying to suck you dry.
Hello?
welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. And, boy, this show is just flying this morning. And it's already time for our first guest. And I'm so excited because I just really enjoyed this book. And I'm so thrilled to be able to have this next guest on air. And Laura Fortang is an internationally recognized as a pioneer in the personal coaching field and is known for her no-nonsense, entertaining writing and speaking styles. She is the best-selling author of Now What? 90 Days to a New Life Direction, Living Your Best Life, Take Yourself to the Top, and The Little Book on Meaning. She is also a finalist for Books for a Better Life Award alongside the Dalai Lama, no small change there, Pema Crodin, Rabbi Harold Kushner, and Sir Thomas More. Laura's books are published in 11 languages and distributed around the world. She is currently a contributing editor for Redbook magazine, and her appearances on The Oprah Winfrey Show, The Early Show, Good Morning America, various nationally syndicated cable outlets, and many others. She is also combined with a major print media such as USA Today, Wall Street Journal, Fast Company, Money, and many international newspapers have paved the way for some of the most successful coaches in the industry today. And now she makes her appearance here on Unlock Your Wealth Radio. So, Laura, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm so glad. The Prosperity Plan, 10 Steps to Beating the Odds and Creating Extraordinary Wealth. And I like how you put "and happiness" in parentheses.
Just a little humor there.
What made you put that in the parentheses?
You know, it was a decision on the publisher's part that I agreed with. It just sort of captured that, you know, along the way, it's not just about the money. It's about how happy you are, too. And a lot of the teachings in the Prosperity Plan are about changing your mindset in order to attract more wealth and more opportunities in your life. And so it definitely comes with a happiness factor.
Yes, I always say to people that money is just a tool. It's not a goal.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people who don't feel like they have enough money don't believe that.
Oh, I agreed.
You know, like, easy for you to say, you have the money. You know, no. You know, it's hard to explain to someone who's still wanting that, you know, money as a goal by itself will probably make you miserable.
Right. Well, money is just a magnifying glass. So whatever you currently have in your life, money is going to make it 10 times better or 10 times worse.
You know, that's a great observation. So true. It just inflates whatever's going on at the time. You're right.
Yeah, I've watched it happen more often than not. And I've seen happy people get rich, and I've seen miserable people get rich, and all it does is make whatever they're doing more apparent.
So true.
It's but more how do you...
Go ahead.
Pardon me?
I said, if you're a complainer, there's more to complain about.
Oh, yeah, because if it's never enough, it's never going to be enough, no matter
right.
how much you have. So how do you get from that hump of being wanton to having?
That, again, another good question. You know, that's what the Prosperity Plan is all about. You know, this isn't a hardcore money advice book. It's more about how to bring the money about. And I also based a lot of it on Jean Chatsky's work, who's a well-known money journalist, because she put out a survey along with Dun & Bradstreet, I believe it was, that surveyed, you know, what is it that has people have money? And it's not just about knowing how. You know, we all know how to be thin. You eat less, you exercise more. We all know how to have more money. make more, save more, you know, spend less. So it's not about the know-how around money. It's about, you know, what causes luck in your life. A lot of it is attitude. And right now with, you know, my pet name for the book is the recovery plan instead of the prosperity plan, because so many people are trying to recover from these last couple of years. And, you know, your question is right to the point of, you know, well, how do you flip that switch? And it's a little bit of, you know, which comes first, the chicken or the egg? Do you have the money and then you get happy? Or do you find gratitude and start seeing possibilities even in a downturn? And I think it's the latter, that, you know, the Prosperity Plan book is set up by the acronym Prosperity, and the first P is about possibilities, that when we're in a bad spot, we don't see possibilities. We see everything that's wrong. And so the first place to switch the switch is kind of adjusting your eyes and adjusting what you say, you know, because a lot of times we're like, oh, it's bad, it's terrible, this, instead of saying, well, you know, it's possible to be out of this within the year. It's possible to find a job in a down economy. It's possible to start a business when it's not the best time. And that's the language and the mindset that you have to start having to see it come to be, because if you have the opposite, you're not taking action.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I go ahead.
Well, and most great fortunes were made in financial down times.
Yes. I mean, if you look at the big depression of the 30s, that some of the most rich old money that's still around happened at those times. And it does take someone who's willing to see opportunity and take risks when others are too afraid to do so. So, you know, the Prosperity Plan is all about becoming that person that beats the odds. And part of it is seeing possibility and barreling through, even if circumstances don't yet look like it's a fortuitous time.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that part of it is gratitude. You know, part of getting that possibility thinking is also investing in gratitude and realizing, you know, it could be worse. You know, even someone having their house foreclosed on, I mean, that seems like a tragedy, and it is in that moment. But it's also like, what opportunities does this allow us? Do we get to start again? Do we get to simplify? Do we get to correct some of our mistakes? There's a lot to be grateful for, and that does help turn things around more quickly as well when you kind of relax into gratitude instead of continuing to suffer over what's wrong.
I think that we have forgotten the value of grace and gratitude in our culture.
Oh, I think you're so right. I mean, we are known as, Americans are known as the culture of more, and, you know, we didn't gain that by accident. It's true. It's always like, you know, okay, that's good. Now on to the next thing. Oh, okay, yay for that. Let's have the next thing. And I think that part of what the last 2 years has done for people is mellowed them a little bit and realizing, you know what? You know, here we have our tragedy of financial hard times in the United States, and, you know, the people in Haiti still don't have houses a year later after they had their cities destroyed. You know, so there's always something to be grateful for.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we do have to use other scenarios to get us back into our own right mindset, give ourselves perspective.
I think the instant gratification that the influx of easy credit took away the value of gratitude, because why do I have to wait and delay my gratification when I can have it right now?
Yeah, and we're all learning the hard lessons of that. You know, being given credit at, you know, no cost, so to speak. Now we're all paying a huge cost for that frenzy that occurred in that, you know, just that time of blind passion, if you want to call it that. Such a high, and so we're crashing from that high, literally.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the unfortunate thing, because, you know, it's such a grand problem that has to be solved, that, you know, there's no easy answer, but it's unfortunate that folks are being let off the hook just to try to clean up the mess, because the burden has been spread over so many for the choices of a select few.
That's true. And yet I hope that, I mean, my greatest hope for the Prosperity Plan and the Recovery Plan is that, you know, that we don't go back to our old ways, that we kind of, you know, get a bit sobered by this and realize, whoa, you know, I was out of control. I need to I need to, you know, put some stop gaps in place so that I don't, we don't do this again, you know, and the greater collective we, but also on an individual we. But, yeah, I mean, I, you know, it's been an interesting series of events. This is a domino effect that's just been tremendous, and it's really worldwide, except for, you know, China's booming, but...
no question. I mean, when the markets did what they did, I was overseas at the time, and it was amazing how everything kind of stopped in that country where we were. And I called the market almost to the day that that was going to happen on my radio show in 2004.
Wow.
And because I could see it coming, I was working in mortgages at the time. And that's why I kept going more over to the real estate side, because I didn't like what was happening, and I couldn't do what I was being asked to do by the upper management. And I said, you know what, I'm not going to do this. And he says, well, they're going to get the loan somewhere. And I said, well, then they can go somewhere else, because I'm not going to write these loans. I just refused to do it. I'm like, they're not right. This is not an if this loan is going to default. It's a when this loan is going to default. And I'm telling you when, because they weren't calculating the affordability ratios right, because they were using these ARMs that had like 1% for 3 years. And they were negative amortization loans. And I'm like, there's no way. As soon as these ARMs start adjusting, and that's when I saw, and that's when I was able to time the market, because I said, okay, when these ARMs adjust, and these high-risk loans were written at such a huge first adjustment, like where their payment were going to double or treble, and they couldn't barely afford that payment that they had.
That first payment, right.
You know, so, and the whole point of putting people on those ARMs was so that they could clean their act up, so to speak, credit-wise and financially, and then reapply to refi that loan into a quality fixed-rate product. But, of course, the gratification occurred instantly. They didn't have to work for it, so they forgot about, oh, I have to fix my credit and work on saving money so I can get a better loan. They're like, whatever, you know, times are great. I can keep doing what I'm doing, because clearly it didn't affect my ability to buy a house this time.
Yeah, and it's one of my points in the Prosperity Plan, in the acronym, the I is for integrity. That really, you know, getting in touch with our integrity and not taking on more than we can really handle, and being really honest with yourself as to what your debts are and what the true cost of those debts are. And, you know, I applaud you for being able to see what was going on and not, you know, falling into the drunken stupor that people were in.
Well, it's just unfortunate that more people weren't listening. The few that did listen, I made multimillionaires out of. And the rest of them just kept saying, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. And then those are the ones that came around later asking me for a job.
Right.
I'm like, I'm sorry. You chose to live without integrity then. What makes me think you're going to live with it now? I can't do this.
Ah, they showed you who they were.
Yes.
And that's one of my favorite Maya Angelou quotes. She says, when people show you who they are, believe them the first time.
Yeah, I love
the
that.
The first time.
The first time. That's key. That's key. So we've engaged in your recovery prosperity plan, and so now that we have put the rose-colored glasses back on, if you will, to see the opportunity,
sure.
Now how do we pursue it? You've got the second chapter is right livelihood. What's the R for?
That first R is right livelihood. Was that what you're asking me?
Yes.
Okay. The right livelihood is a Buddhist term for, you know, doing the work that spreads the good. And before we hit this serious economic crash, what I saw happening from 9/11, almost 4 days after 9/11, till 2 years ago, was people really struggling with the meaning of their work. More and more people saying, I want to do something more meaningful. You know, and for a lot of people, they directly think, you know, right, why do I have to become a nonprofit or do something hugely altruistic? But I think, you know, for some people, that'll be the right choice. But for a lot of people, it's really just getting back to understanding why we do what we do and have it mean something to you, that it is more than the paycheck. And I think as the economy got more scary, you know, people are kind of like, I can't afford to do that right now. We'll put that on the back burner. But what does help people prosper, because prosperity isn't just about the money. It's about the well-being and the flow of your life, things kind of, you know, moving out of problems and more into opportunities, is that when you're doing something that you feel connected to, when you're doing something that you feel has some kind of purpose, whether it be hugely altruistic or at least, you know, of service in some way, there's an energetic momentum that happens because of that. You know, when you're doing something that touches other people and then you need help, there's people there ready to help. So right livelihood is, again, a Buddhist term, but it's in terms of aligning yourself with your work. There's so many people who hate what they do, and actually the numbers usually run about 50% in this country of people that are dissatisfied with their work, but it's actually right now up to 80%. And, you know, there's a lot of people right now who would say, oh, you should just be happy to have a job, but people still want to feel good about what they do.
How does that relate to congruence in one's life and the ability to attract wealth?
Well, one of the things is what I said, that, you know, as you put goodwill out there, goodwill comes back to you. But also, there's a commitment. I, as someone who was an actor in my first career, I can attest to this in this way, that when it was just all about, oh, my pictures and my auditions and how I look and if I'm going to get hired, it became a very dissatisfying way to be, especially if you didn't succeed the way you wanted to. And then when I kind of got the message and switched my work to something that made a difference, not just to me but to other people, you become less attached to those results, you know, less attached to, like, you know, if I don't make it, I am nothing. And you start realizing that your impact is greater than just your own pocket filling or your own success as you're seen in the eyes of others. It becomes, you know, as an author, I can say, and I don't, you probably get this with your radio show, you know, when I hear from somebody who I never even knew, and I never knew they picked up my book, but they write to me and say XYZ happened because of those words, that makes me want to keep doing it more. So I think that when you're connected to what you do and you know it makes a difference, you work harder. You're not so much afraid of getting out there and doing what you want, because you know it's not just about whether you succeed or fail. It's about what you do making a difference, and that is needed. That'll actually be missed if you don't do it. And I think that gives people more motivation to beat the odds.
I think that plays into one of my favorite questions. And I remember when it was shared with me, and I find myself saying this over and over like a broken record to my stepson when he makes ineffective choices, and I always say, how do you want to be remembered?
Mm.
And he says, well, I want to be remembered like this. And then I say, well, do you think that's what people think of you now? And when he, you know, the first time I said that to him, he goes, yes. And I said, are you sure? Because I think you should go take a poll and confirm that. Because right now, I don't believe that you're in line action-wise with how you want to be remembered.
And that's, you're asking the same question. It's like, what impact do you want to have? And I think it's a very sobering question, and I think it's one that leads you to, you know, if you want to be awake and conscious in your life, you will answer that question. And part of prosperity and feeling well and good, and, you know, I know I'm not trying to replace just feeling good about what you do versus money. It's not versus. They can be and. You know, if you're starting to feel like you want to be more conscious and awake in your world, you are going to care about this. You know, if you want to just go right back to sleep and deny that, you know, you have any effect on the ripple effect of life, then, you know, that's one way to live too. So
right.
I hope he hears you.
Well, I'm going to continue to say it until it sinks in. And I remember being 13, and I know how hard-headed I was. Because by the time I got to 18, I knew it all.
Yes, of course.
And not only did I know it all, I was going to make sure everybody knew that I knew it all, too. And what I realized rather quickly is that I didn't know anything, and I really looked stupid for my position. And then now at 41, I realize I don't know enough, but I do have information to share that might shorten somebody's learning curve.
Right. Well, what you've got is, you know, you're a student of life. You're interested and curious, and you have this passion for sharing it because, you know, you'll save someone else the trouble.
Well, yeah, because I wish I had me back when I was young to have somebody say the things that I'm saying now. I wish I could have had somebody back then. And so that's where I find my value, and I feel like what I'm doing is part of my legacy, and to empower others to understand financial concepts and that they're not sophisticated, and you don't have to have an MBA from Harvard to sort it all out or a master's in finance. And most of it has just to come with the things that you talk about in the prosperity plan, and most of it is attitude and awareness more
That's
so
right.
than anything. One of the things that I think would be really cool but I know would never happen is, you know, in order to be able to take a foreclosure, I feel like they should have to go through some sort of financial literacy course. You know, back in the day, they used to require financial literacy on FHA loans in order to get a reduction in your upfront mortgage insurance premium, mm-hmm. and it was a two-day class. I know I used to teach them. And then when money became so cheap and there was such an excess of cash in the mortgage insurance fund, because nobody was foreclosing, because everybody could afford their homes, they did away with that requirement. And that was, I think, the worst thing. They reduced the overall charge of the mortgage insurance premium, and they eliminated the requirement. And I thought, oh, no, recipe for disaster.
You know, you're so that I never thought of it that way, but that would be an amazing thing. You know, I mean, they put people through stuff to adopt a child or to – you know, even to take get a license to drive on the road. I absolutely think, you know, the fact that people, that banks or whoever assume financial literacy is a given is, you know, not so. I think that's a brilliant idea. Who do we have to talk to?
Yeah, I know. How can we make that happen? Well, I mean, we can incentivize it because people just don't do things because it's the right thing to do. Most people have to be motivated by some sort of carrot dangling in order to get off their duff. And so let's say we don't make them take as big a hit on their income tax when they have to pay that foreclosure difference. Because all of that money that it's sold at auction, that difference from what you owe, you have to pay income tax on. It was like as if it was income. So you think you're walking away from your house but because you were underwater $100,000, but you're going to get spanked on your income tax for that $100,000.
Right. Right.
So maybe we only spank them like, I don't know, 80. Give them a little break, 20% off or something if they took financial literacy. That could be one way.
Just like they do with, you know, car insurance. If your kid takes driver's ed, that you get cheaper insurance. It all makes sense. There's precedence. There's precedence for it. You know, and that's part of why I hope this book, The Prosperity Plan, hits people is, you know, with that subtitle of 10 Steps to Beating the Odds, it's like these things do matter if you want to get out of this more quickly. You know, I'm hoping that, you know, when you're down, when you've kind of been hacked at the knees, that's when people are willing to say, you know, maybe I don't know anything. Maybe I, you know, fooled myself. And so I do see this time as an opportunity, like a little window, a little opening for people asking some tough questions of themselves and getting more conscious about how they deal with their money. So that, I mean, I put that out there as a possibility, and it sounds like you're more skeptical that could happen, but.
Well, I just, I think that I've had an innumerable amount of time in the trenches dealing with people from day to day. I mean, that's how I came up with my Keys to Riches financial wellness theories, is because of what I was seeing. And it's not like we don't know to spend less than we make. But
right.
It more has to do with a lot of these other more esoteric things that we pick up from our parents that actually become our value system and the way we make our decisions. And what I liked about the prosperity plan is because it kind of opens up all of those channels, again, to allow you to look at life differently.
Exactly. That is my hope, that we look at it differently and behave differently, and we'll get different results.
Yeah, well, the book is well laid out. It's beautiful, and it's elegant and eloquent. I like the way, I knocked it out in a short period of time.
It's short.
I love to read, so I really enjoyed the path that it leads you on, and I loved how you used prosperity as an acronym. I thought that was great.
Thank you.
You know, go ahead.
No, just say it is a short book for anyone who's worried about, you know, having to read through anything big and thick. Not at all. It's a quick read, 10 steps. Right.
So it's not something that's super elaborate. It's like, okay, start here at one and work your way forward. So that's what's nice about this is it's kind of a manual for prosperity. You know, I think plan was the right word that you chose. Now, if there was one thing, because we're coming to a close in our time together today,
mm-hmm.
if there was one thing that you would like to leave the listeners with about prosperity or wealth or happiness or all of that, what would that be?
It's to understand that everything that we've talked about so far is about recalibrating yourself. You know, like, and you might not know, you may not be conscious of any negativity that you're saying or putting out there about your money or your life situation, but even just complaining, you know, we all need a place to vent, but even just complaining kind of puts your whole body into a currency, kind of a vibration. And if we could just walk away with thinking that you can actually change that, you know, just walking around with a different posture, you're going to interact differently in your world. It's a place to start. Like we talked about turning on that switch. Turn on that switch in your mind, in your body, and, you know, walk through life expecting better.
I like that. If folks want to get a hold of your book, Laura, where can they go?
You know, Amazon.com has a great price on it. And if people are curious about the prosperity plan and the programs that I have around that for this year, they can go to theprosperityplan.net. And, in fact, I have some free gifts for anyone who is buying their book online. Theprosperityplan.net/promo will tell you all about it, and you'll get some free downloads there.
Oh, awesome. I love when guests bring gifts for the listeners. That's so wonderful. Thank you so much for doing that.
My pleasure.
And as always, if you are driving around and are unable to write down the website, we have links to all of our show guests at unlockyourwealth.com. Thanks so much to Laura for joining us and for her special offers. We will be back with more Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio coming up right after this.
Hey, this is Coca Brown from the hit radio show The Truth with Coca Brown on HollywoodOutlaws.com radio. And you're listening to me on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Hi, it's Marty Logan here from the Top Gun Sales Academy. You know, one thing I've learned over the years is that the most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Naturally, Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, and Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside. They knew they could easily become. Truly, financial coaching can be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. That toll free number again is 1-866-966-9420. Or simply visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K-Free Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, industries.com. Like, go there, totally!
Even in today's economy, I, Count Dracula, have had to foreclose on my castle. But because of Heather Wagonhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, I have not only reacquired my castle, but I have opened a resort for the undead. Tune in to Heather Wagonhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She's the only one not trying to suck you dry.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You are listening to Laura Forte on Heather Wagonhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. And it's that time again. Yes, it is, for our minute on your money. So, interesting article. Top Massachusetts court rules against foreclosing banks. Written by Jonathan Stemple and Dina Albin from Reuters. In a ruling that may affect foreclosures nationwide, Massachusetts' highest court voided the seizure of two homes by Wells Fargo and U.S. Bank after the banks failed to show they held the mortgages at the time they foreclosed. Bank shares fell, dragging down the broader U.S. stock market after the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts on Friday issued its decision, which upheld a lower court ruling. The decision is among the earliest to address the validity of foreclosures conducted without full documentation. That issue last year prompted an uproar that led lenders such as Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, and Ally Financial to temporarily stop seizing homes. Courts in other U.S. states are considering similar cases, and all 50 state attorneys general are examining whether lenders are forcing people out of their homes improperly. Friday's decision may also threaten banks' abilities to package mortgages into securities, including whether loans that were transferred improperly might need to be bought back. Wells Fargo and U.S. Bancorp lacked authority to foreclose after having failed to make the required showings that they were the holders of the mortgages at the time of the foreclosure, Justice Ralph Gantz wrote for a unanimous court. Wells Fargo was not immediately available for comment. U.S. Bancorp spokesperson Steve Dale said the ruling had no financial impact on the bank, which has no responsibility for the terms of the underlying mortgage or the procedures by which they were transferred into a mortgage trust. Michael Pill, a partner at Green Miles Lipton and Fitzgibbon in Northampton, who represents homeowners, says what they were doing was peddling these mortgages and leaving the paperwork behind. Here's where I take issue. Now, I do not know all the facts of this case. I'll say that up front. I'm not familiar with this, so I'm not passing judgment on this. But let me explain to you what specifically they're referring to. And what they're referring to is when mortgages are sold. Now, here's how the flow of money works. Okay, and I teach this in a class, and so I'm going to give you the boiled down version because we do talk about it on our Remember Real Estate Key, and that's our 10th key in the Keys to Riches Financial Wellness series. So in week 10 in March, we'll be going over this in depth because it has to do with how we qualify for a mortgage. But what happens is after you meet these criteria, these four layers of risk that we talk about, and they want to give you a loan, in that documentation that nobody ever reads. When I used to, I would go sign my own borrowers when I was in mortgages, and I would make them read the mortgage, and you would be shocked to find out people who have bought and sold several homes and never ever read their mortgage paperwork or even knew what the deed of trust said. Didn't even know. Didn't know what their rights were or their obligations that they were committing to. They had no idea. And I would go through each section. I would say, I'm going to boil it down to you in plain terms, but go ahead and read this section. And then I would boil it down and like, wow, I didn't even know that's what that meant. They have the right in the mortgage documents that you grant them when you take the loan that says that it's okay with you that they can sell your note to someone else. Now, when this happens, it happens for a few reasons. If it is just a broker, they're just the middleman for the bank, if you go to a mortgage broker. If you go to an actual lender, they have the money to give you to buy your property. So when a bank needs more money or the direction of the bank changes, they sell off assets. So they can take your note, which is worth money. Not as much as they lent you, but it's worth money. They discount it because a dollar is worth less today than it is 10 days from now. So instead of being able to collect all the interest, they sell that note of yours to someone else. And someone else buys it, and then they collect the payments on it. So that's how the money is made, by the servicing of the loan. So not all banks that fund them collect all the payments. Sometimes they collect two, three, or four, which is what you call seasoning a loan, and then they sell it off, that they know that the loan is working, that you're making your payments. So it's a performing loan, so they know that they can go get more money in the marketplace than versus you default at the very beginning. So banks do this all the time, and thanks to the miracles of modern technology, most of this stuff happens electronically. And what this is referring to is the backlog of the physical note being pulled out of a warehouse and hand-delivered to them. And I know a lot of people have skirted the commitments that they made in some of these mortgage notes by saying, well, you have to prove it to me that you own my note. Show me the paperwork that says that you own my note. Well, you know, when you buy groceries and you buy 10 cans of soup, it just says soup and then it says whatever it is, if it's all the same brand. So you don't know if it was Campbell's chicken soup or Campbell's cream of mushroom. So they just have a register tape of all of these loans. They don't have the physical paperwork always. Sometimes it's scanned and provided to them electronically, but most of the time that physical piece of paper you sign is sitting in the box in somebody's warehouse, and it may or may not have been transferred. And what people are trying to do is get around the fact that they have to prove that they own the note. And in my estimation, it's just a bunch of people who are trying to skirt the commitments that they made and try to wangle a way to stay in a home that they can't afford and haven't been paying for. That's the problem here. Because, you know what? It's not the people that are paying their bills that are having the problem. Those people aren't getting foreclosed upon. The bank doesn't have to prove to them that they own a note. They just collect the payments. You're given a letter from your current mortgage company saying, we're changing your service, or we're selling your loan to someone else. This just happened to me again. My loan on one of my investment properties just got sold to somebody else. And then the new people call you, introduce themselves, confirm the information, mailing address, and all of that stuff, and let you know whether or not your payment's been forwarded. And that way you know that it's happened. The current mortgage company says, we're selling it. They send you a letter. The next mortgage company sends you a letter saying, we've received it. As long as you pay your bills, you're not going to have an issue. So while I believe that proper documentation should occur in everything, and I realize that there is a level of carelessness going on because of the state of the industry, if you're not paying your mortgage, you're not paying your mortgage. And the purpose of wasting all of this taxpayer money in court to get you a couple of extra months is ridiculous. And so I take issue with this, and I can't believe the court ruled in this manner, but, you know, you never know what the court's going to do. So the Massachusetts is one of 27 states that doesn't require court approval to foreclose, which means they're non-judicial foreclosures. So like here in Arizona, we are a deed of trust state. And what that means is if you're in default, they can foreclose within 90 days after doing a public notice. A lot of people have never read their mortgage documents. And let me just tell you, when you're in default, if I ask this as a trivia question, I guarantee, unless you were a mortgage lender, nobody would get this right. Not one person that's a homeowner or whoever signed a mortgage would know this. But your payments that you commit to, that you obligate yourself to when you sign that, says, my payments are due on the first of every month. If my payment does not arrive on or before the first of every month, I am in default. So when does default occur? Not at the 15th when your payment gets a late fee. Not when you're 3 months past due. You were in default on the second day of the month if your payment did not make it on the first. And you agreed to it when you signed that. Now in Arizona, the way it works with contracts here is it doesn't matter if you read it. It doesn't matter if you understood it. It doesn't matter if it's written in your primary language. If you signed a document, that means that you agree to the contents therein. I don't know how other states work, but if that's what you're doing and you're committing to something and say, well, I didn't know, then you should have read. This is something that I have no flexibility on. I have a tough time being kind or gracious because you have all the time in the world to sign that paperwork. And if somebody's rushing you through it, clearly you shouldn't be doing that with them. There is no situation that is so dire that you have to make a financial decision that's the single largest financial decision in your entire life that will impact the rest of your life. Like a mortgage, and you need to take the time and read all that stuff. So my challenge to you is if you didn't know that you're in default the second day of the month, if your payment was due on the first and they don't have it in their hot little hands and haven't credited your account, I would suggest that for an entertaining evening that you and your significant other or who else ever signed on your mortgage documents, grab that for some titillating, interesting reading. For this evening, you could do it over dinner. You don't want to do it during a movie because you'll get distracted. Something funny will happen on the movie, and then you'll forget about the mortgage. So do it over dinner and learn about what you committed to and understand the seriousness of your obligations. This is why our country is so screwed up, is because we just need to gratify ourselves first and we'll sign or do whatever it is, including selling our soul to the devil half the time, so we can live like the people that do have money. We take that opportunity cost that you learn about that concept in economics in high school, and we say, I'm going to do this now, and this is the opportunity cost. So we have to think about these things just a little bit more. And as if they didn't have enough to do on their hands with privacy issues, Facebook may go public in 2012. The company expects to have more than 500 shareholders this year, which would require it to file public reports on its finances. And it may just be simpler to do an IPO. Interesting. Facebook will be disclosing financial information or stage an IPO by April of 2012, according to a new 100-page private placement memo being distributed to potential investors in the company. According to the Wall Street Journal, the popular social networking company said in its document that it intends to breach a critical 500 shareholder limit this year. So crossing the limit triggers an SEC rule that requires companies to file financial information even if their shares do not trade publicly. So Facebook's intentions have been under heavy debate since the company launched a private share offering through Goldman Sachs this week. Some investors have wondered whether the arrangement with Goldman was designed to avoid such disclosures. The document makes clear that this isn't the case and that Facebook will likely be a publicly traded company in 2012. Facebook raised $500 million in its placement. The offering implied a value of some $50 billion with a B, as in, boy, that's a lot of money for the company. Spokesmen for Facebook and Goldman Sachs declined to comment, and companies have 120 days after crossing this year-end 500 shareholder threshold to register as a reporting company. Companies can go over the 500 limit during their financial year and avoid the reporting requirements, provided that on the date of their fiscal year-end, they have fewer than 500 shareholders. According to John Coffey, a securities law expert at Columbia University Law School, says it happens all the time, and it's a common process for smaller Silicon Valley companies to find themselves with, says, 510 shareholders and a buyback, and to find themselves with 510 shareholders and then buy back 11 of them before the year end to avoid this reporting thing. Coming under 500 doesn't force companies to go public, though most companies conclude they may as well reap the benefits of being public if they have to make all of those similar financial disclosures. Thank you, Sarbanes-Oxley, and kind of sort of not really. And in additional stock news, the ascent of Apple stock prices slows up. Apple shares closed at $333.73, near all-time high. Some analysts have price targets on the stock above $450, and if Apple shares reach that level, the tech giant would likely pass ExxonMobil as the most valuable U.S.-listed company. What analysts do not talk about is that Apple stock price growth has slowed substantially, especially on the NASDAQ. Apple rose 60% in the last year, while NASDAQ was only up 20. However, in the last 3 months, Apple rose 15, but the NASDAQ was up 14. In the last month, Apple hasn't risen much over 5%, and the NASDAQ climbed 4. The reality is that Apple hasn't risen toward those optimistic $450 targets as quickly as many analysts expected. There are a few reasons. The skepticism about Apple's next quarterly financial report is part of it. Thomson Reuters shows that high-end estimates for earnings per share among analysts who follow the company is $5.75. The low estimate is just under $5. And Apple typically outperforms its forecasts, but some experts don't think that's going to happen for this last quarter. And that's something to pay attention to if you're an individual stock trader. Wow, I can't believe our first hour has come to a close. But stay tuned because we have so much coming up. Kenneth Rubenstein is going to talk about international asset protection. It's very elusive, so sophisticated. But we will learn how to understand it coming up on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. We will be right back with more, plus the key sources, after this.
Stay tuned for the second half of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio with the keys to riches, right after this.
Close more sales. Close more sales. Close more sales. Hi, this is Commander Marty Logan from the Top Gun Sales Academy. Are you the best salesperson you can be today? If not, allow us to help you to outpace your competition, your fellow peers, and recession-proof your business. Visit us at www.thetopgunseminars.com, 480-626-5883. Don't make excuses. Make it happen.
Are you a referral partner of the Unlock Your Wealth radio program? Would you like to promote your products and your services on our show? Learn about the benefits that our featured advertisers receive being part of an exclusive program where the listeners are seeking financial independence and are in need of your insurance, finance, real estate, and investment services. Call now at 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420. Reach the people who need your help the most with the Unlock Your Wealth radio show today.
Hey, this is Coca Brown from the hit radio show, The Truth with Coca Brown on HollywoodOutlaws.com radio. And you're listening to me on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth radio.
Hi, it's Marty Logan here from the Top Gun Sales Academy. You know, one thing I've learned over the years is that the most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Naturally, Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, and Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside. They knew they could easily become. Truly, financial coaching could be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. That toll-free number again is 1-866-966-9420, or simply visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, industries.com. Like, go there, totally!
Even in today's economy, I, Count Dracula, have had to foreclose on my castle. But because of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth radio, I have not only reacquired my castle, but I have opened a resort for the undead. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth radio. She's the only one not trying to suck you dry.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I am she, your hostess of the Financial Moses, Heather Wagenhall's, and we're just chugging along. And I didn't mention it in the first hour, so I'm going to take the time to do it now. Shorty awards are upon us. The voting is now open. We were as high as number 3 in the Shorty Awards ranking just yesterday. We've fallen a couple notches. What does that mean to you exactly? Well, let me tell you. For those of you who are joining us for the first time, welcome again to the broadcast. We're beginning our second half of the show. And the Shorty Awards has to do with real-time short content production. What am I saying? It's Twitter. And they have an Academy Awards for content on Twitter. And we, the Unlock Your Wealth radio program, have been nominated for a Shorty Award. Just to give you an idea of the value that this show brings, not on air only, but through our website and unlockyourwealth.com, but we are with you all day long, each and every day, through Twitter and Facebook. We have posted over 6,000-something, and I'm not looking at the page right now, but we have posted well over 6,000 short messages via Twitter. These could be motivational quotes, nuggets from our broadcast, tips, tricks, tools, coupons, information, contests, all that stuff goes through our Twitter account for our followers. If you're not a follower on social media and want to have more access to the quality and the content that we put forth, not just within the broadcast, but each and every day, you got to follow us. If you are an existing Twitter user, and that's the criteria for participating in the Shorty Awards, you can vote. You can't just sign up for a Twitter account to vote and then pad the vote. So you have to be an existing Twitter user when the Shorty Awards come around. And last year we only got to 23, but we got a late start at it. We didn't even know what they were until one of our listeners nominated, and we only had like 6 days to compete. But we have more time on our side because they just opened the voting, and we were up to number 3 yesterday. And guess who we're ahead of? Yes, that other female financial Chiquita that's on TV. And boy, it feels so good to know how much value that we're providing, that our listeners are taking the time to vote for us over her and all the other financial gurus that are out there. So if you haven't had an opportunity to vote for us for a Shorty Award and are currently finding value that we send you each and every day through Twitter, through our broadcast, through our free membership on our website at unlockyourwealth.com, then please go vote for us for a Shorty Award in the finance category. I'll make it real simple for you. All you have to do is surf over to www.shortyawards.com/unlockyrwealth. It's our Twitter name. And, you know, we're stopped at 15 characters. We could have used 17 to get the whole thing, but we're stuck at 15 characters. So, again, it's shortyawards.com/unlockyrwealth. And then the screen pops up. You log in with your Twitter account, and then you vote. It pre-fills it in. And it says, I vote for @unlockyrwealth for a Shorty Award in #finance, because, and then you put why you feel we should win. And we are working so hard. We are so ahead of the game. We're so excited that we've made the leaderboard and we've gotten as high as 3. We're on the front page of the Shorty Awards for our category. It's so exciting to see the value from all the listeners and all of our followers. So be sure that you go and vote. And visit our website, too, because that will also show you the value of our content, not in 140 characters or less, but in 140 characters and many more at unlockyourwealth.com. We have a free membership available on our website. Our key membership is our free membership, and that gives you the introductory lessons for the Keys to Riches Financial Wellness Series, plus access to our chat room forums, our discussion boards, all of our blogs, and for 24 hours after we let a strategy go on the air, you can download it for free. Now, premium members have full-time access, and we're coming up with a special promotion just to entice you to take and convert your membership from a key membership to a premium membership. But make sure that you visit our website, friend us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and if you truly find value in what we do here each and every day, by all means, please take the time and vote for us for a Shorty Awards. www.shortyawards.com/unlockyrwealth. And that brings us to our next segment.
I've seen the future. I can't afford it.
Yes, it is that time again for our Millionaire Minute.
Tell me, how to be a millionaire.
Yes, it's that time again, that segment where we crawl into the heads of top millionaire thinkers and put out 60 seconds of tools you can incorporate into your life right now, today. And this week's Millionaire Minute is focusing on one of Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, and that is to begin with the end in mind. Millionaires consider the outcome they are going for before they begin their endeavor. And what separates the millionaires from the masses is simply taking the time to think about what it is you want. Charles Buffington, a previous show guest and author of He Said It, I Did It, Financial Lessons My Father Taught Me, hope is not a strategy. Hope comes from desperation. Hope is not a strategy. It is not a plan. And what you need to know is millionaires begin with the end in mind, and they work themselves backwards from their goal. Now, fully and completely integrate this idea of beginning with the end in mind now. See yourself in this way, beginning with the end in mind. Look forward into the future and watch how differently people will respond to you, knowing that you have begun with the end in mind. Imagine yourself with these successes already. Take a moment to create some affirmations with these tools as well to reinforce what you have just integrated into your personality by beginning with the end in mind. And that's your Millionaire Minute for today. Be sure to tune in to our Tuesday show at 6:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for our in-depth look at millionaires and their habits, including our Millionaire Focus strategy on our Unlock Your Wealth Radio To Go show. We're going to take this theme of beginning with the end in mind, and we're going to talk about how do you create your day on Tuesday. So please join us at 6:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time to start your day the millionaire way. And for those of you who attempted to tune in to Tuesday's show, there was a cluster with the programming, and the show went off at like 4 o'clock in the morning when we were all still asleep, including me, who doesn't get up until 5. So we missed our Tuesday show because of a programming glitch. So we will be back in action this week. And now it's time for our next guest. I'm so excited because we've never covered this topic on the show. And I'm really pleased about our next guest because Kenneth Rubenstein is going to join us. He is a senior partner at Rubenstein and Rubenstein, an international law firm based in New York City that provides specialized legal expertise in the areas of domestic and international planning and estate and tax planning, plus offshore investment. They regularly represent a diverse group of clients in the area of debtors and creditors' rights, business entity structures and strategic planning, representation before the all-favorite relative, Uncle Sam, and state tax departments. They also do probate, estate tax litigation, business and commercial litigation. But Mr. Rubenstein is joining us today to specifically talk about international asset protection and offshore investment. Welcome to the broadcast, Kenneth.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be there.
I'm so excited that you're joining us today. We've never covered international asset protection for our Investor's Edge segment, and it's something that I'm familiar with because I'm involved in it, and other people have talked about it, and you hear it dropped in TV shows and dramas and all sorts of different things. But does anybody really know what it is? And we've never addressed it on the show, and I thought, gosh, this is a fantastic topic for us. Explain a little bit to our listeners about what is international asset protection.
Well, first let's explain what asset protection is, because you can protect your assets here in the U.S. in most cases as well, and that's probably easier and less expensive and more desirable for people. Asset protection is simply structuring ownership of your assets in such a way that future litigants, future creditors, cannot get to those assets if they have a claim against you. Domestic asset protection means using structures here in the U.S., certain kinds of trusts, family limited partnerships, limited liability companies to protect those assets. Offshore asset protection means using similar kinds of structures, but setting them up offshore and moving the assets offshore to be held by the structures there.
What's the value for someone in moving their asset protection offshore?
In some situations, you can't achieve adequate domestic asset protection here in the U.S. For example, if you're concerned about possibly being involved in a divorce situation, it's very, very difficult, if not impossible, to protect your assets from the claims of an ex-spouse here in the U.S. The only way you can effectively do that is with international asset protection. I'm sorry, go ahead.
What if a spouse or a soon-to-be former spouse knows about those assets overseas?
Doesn't make a difference.
It doesn't?
They can't do anything about it.
Okay.
If it's done correctly. If
okay.
you transfer the assets, you set up an asset protection trust, for example, in a jurisdiction that will not recognize U.S. court jurisdiction, that will not recognize judgments or orders from a U.S. court, and you transfer the assets to a trustee of that trust, and you give up complete legal control over those assets to the trustee. The trustee is a fiduciary. He's bound by law. He's regulated and licensed in the foreign country, supervised by the government of that foreign country. Typically, he's an attorney there. So he's going to hold and own those assets for your benefit, not for anybody else's benefit, and do what's right for you. But if he holds those assets, no matter what your ex-spouse tries to do, the U.S. legal system will not be able to touch those assets.
Okay. Now, what kind of assets are we talking about? Physical property, money,
businesses? We're talking essentially about money. In order for international asset protection to work, you have to physically move the asset to the foreign country. You can't pick up real estate and move it offshore. You can't pick up a business that's operating here in the U.S. and move it offshore. Simply sending the stock certificate to sit in an attorney's vault in a different country won't cut it. The business and the real asset of the business is the money that the business is making. That's happening here in the U.S. So a U.S. court still has control over it.
Okay. Now, go ahead.
It works for money, stocks and bonds, assets that you can physically pick up and move offshore.
Okay. So I couldn't register my slick, you know, $1.5 million Veyron and drive it here in the U.S. but hold the title in another country?
No.
Okay. So now what if you are a person that does business internationally? You have a company here, but but it also does business in other countries, or you do your manufacturing in other countries, would you use an offshore investment for that?
Yes. You would basically set up an offshore structure to take advantage of tax minimization opportunities that are available to you on your offshore manufacturing and offshore sales. And you would also, if you picked the right country, be able to take advantage of favorable tax treaties, reciprocal tax treaties that the U.S. has in place with a very few countries that could even allow the business to continue to operate in the U.S. but not pay taxes here in the U.S.
Wow. That could be a significant boost to your bottom line.
Yes.
If that was the case.
Right.
Now, we've heard in the news, and I've noticed some conversations around some of the golf clubs and things, about Obama being on the hunt for offshore assets and the sheltering of assets. What truth or validity is there to that rumor? And if so, what would that mean to individuals using these investments?
There is a great deal of truth to that rumor. It's not a rumor, it's a fact. It doesn't mean anything whatsoever to any of my clients. Obama, the government, the IRS, is on the hunt, as you put it, for hidden, non-disclosed offshore accounts. Offshore accounts that are established and operated in violation of U.S. law. It is possible to structure offshore entities for asset protection and even for tax minimization purposes in a legal, tax-compliant manner, making full disclosure to the IRS.
Well, why
but
would
still
somebody
get
not
the
do
benefit
that?
Of the tax minimization? I'm sorry?
Well, if they don't lose the tax minimization, what would be the benefit of doing it illegally?
There is no benefit whatsoever. That's what happens when people either get bad advice or engage in do-it-yourself asset protection or do-it-yourself tax planning.
Ah, okay. So if you, like, order that kit on the internet from the paralegal,
yeah,
that says
exactly,
set up your own offshore
exactly.
deal?
Exactly. There is an entire international industry that is grounded in fraud. Okay, that is simply not telling U.S. people the truth, telling them we'll set up a secret account for you, you'll never get caught, you'll never have a problem, and you don't have to worry about the U.S. tax laws because it's going to be hidden. You know, this is the old, if you remember the old movie, The Firm, secret
mm-hmm.
account in the Cayman Islands kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah, that doesn't exist anymore. That is not legal, and it's not necessary to do that if there is a legal way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Now, what if you own an interest in a completely foreign entity? How do you have to go to that foreign country in order to spend that money there? What if you wanted to spend that money while you're here?
You could spend it here. There's no reason why, if you had a foreign bank account or a foreign entity that had a foreign bank account, that you couldn't have money transferred to you here. It's got to
become
legally.
And would there be tax consequences for that? Or?
Well, if assuming that you set up that foreign entity legally, that you made proper disclosure to the IRS. See, there's no law in the United States that says that you cannot have foreign accounts or foreign entities. The law says you have to tell the IRS about it. But it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to pay 10 cents more in tax because you have it. So if you comply with the law, if you make full disclosure in the proper manner, there's no difference between that foreign account and an account at the bank on your on the corner of your street. You can write checks against it. You can get wire transfers from it. You can have a debit card on it, anything you want.
Okay. So, well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, you just have to do it the right way.
Yeah. So, you know, so what happens if you haven't set it up legally? Let's say you did skirt the IRS. on your disclosure part. And what would happen if you moved some of that money this way?
Well, if you have an illegal account, you can bet that the IRS is going to find out about it. There is a very, very active and strong campaign to discover all of these foreign accounts. The United States has entered into tax information exchange agreements with virtually every country in the world. We can just, you know, leave out three or four countries, Cuba, you know, Albania maybe, you know, no country that you would want to have your money in.
Yeah.
Every country that has a reliable banking system has signed a tax information exchange agreement with the United States. The IRS can request information and is requesting information from virtually every major foreign bank. It sued UBS a couple of years ago and won the lawsuit. UBS paid a fine of, I think, about almost $800 billion.
With the B, billion?
Yes, with a B.
Wow.
And disclosed approximately 4,500 U.S. account holders that had foreign accounts at UBS in Switzerland. Those people are being prosecuted right now for criminal tax fraud. A lot of them are going to face jail time. The others are facing very, very heavy fines and penalties. The IRS is in the process of investigating Credit Suisse, HSBC. I can go down the list. There are another dozen banks that are being investigated right now, and they're going to move on to others. The IRS has opened field offices in Beijing, in Panama City, in Sydney, Australia, and in many other major financial centers across the world.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have an illegal foreign account, it's going to be found out. What the IRS is doing is they do have what they call a voluntary disclosure program that says if you come forward and disclose the account before we find it, then you'll pay the back taxes, you'll pay interest, you may even pay penalties, but we won't prosecute you criminally.
So do you think a lot of people will come forward?
A lot of people are. We are representing lots of clients in bringing them to the voluntary disclosure program and negotiating civil treatment and negotiating reduced penalties.
Now, does that change if you were a dual citizen?
Doesn't make a difference.
It doesn't?
No. Unfortunately, we have the strictest and the most draconian tax system in the world. In most, if not all, other countries, you pay tax on the income you earn in that country. If you're living in Spain, you pay tax to the Spanish government on the income you earn in Spain. The income you earn in Italy is not going to be taxed in Spain. In the United States, a U.S. person, and that is defined as a U.S. citizen no matter where he's living in the world, or a U.S. resident, you don't have to be a U.S. citizen, you just have to be living here, has to pay tax to the IRS on all of their worldwide income. You can be making that money on the moon. You'd have to pay tax to the IRS on it.
Wow. That kind of stinks.
Right.
I guess it's a small price to pay, though, for the opportunity that America has to realize your dreams.
Well, yes, that is absolutely correct, but that is a subject of great debate today because there are a lot, you know, the world is different from the way it was many years ago when the United States was the only great country in the world. There are countries all over the world where people live very, very nicely and where people have the same democratic protections that we do over here, and they don't pay nearly as much taxes as we do over here. But that's a political discussion, not a legal discussion.
Right. So if we moved over there, chose to work and earn money over there, and chose to reside in that country, because I'm still a U.S. citizen, I got to still pay taxes here?
You still have to pay taxes here, yes. You'll get certain credits. You're allowed a credit if you're living and working in the foreign country. You're allowed a credit for about $101,000 foreign wages. You may be allowed another $30,000 of housing credit. If you pay taxes to the foreign country and there is a reciprocal tax treaty in place between the U.S. and that foreign country, you would be able to take a credit for the foreign taxes against your U.S. taxes. But the bottom line is, above and beyond those credits, you'd have to pay tax to the United States.
Yeah, so if you make more than $100,000 in a foreign country, you're going to get double whacked.
If you made $500,000 in the foreign country, you'll have your $100,000 credit. You may have a $30,000 housing credit. If you paid 10% tax to the foreign country, let's remember, most foreign countries have much lower tax rates than we do. Okay, if you paid 10% tax to the foreign country and the tax rate here is 35%, you'd have to pay the other 50% to the U.S.
That's nuts.
Oh, it's not nuts. It's the law.
Well, it's a nutty law.
But it is the law, and the United States enforces it. I represent lots of people who are living in foreign countries and working in foreign countries who have a tax bill to the IRS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably a big one, too.
Yes, very well. You know what? It's not just the billionaires and billionaires that are living overseas. I was at a meeting at the IRS the other day representing a client who is a pilot. He pilots private jets. Hasn't set foot in the United States in years. Okay, and he flies between Abu Dhabi and Saudi Arabia and Malaysia and London and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? He's not making $1 million a year. He's a pilot. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
He has to pay tax to the United States. He hasn't set foot in this country in years.
I had a friend that worked for 6 months in a foreign country setting up a telecommunications center, mm-hmm. a call center.
Right.
And he's like, holy cow, I can't pay, the IRS wants part of my money.
And that's right. And if he's only been there for 6 months, he doesn't get the $101,000 credit.
Yeah.
That's not long enough.
Which makes it almost like, why did he go? For the good time? I mean, it was a dangerous place for him to be where he set it up. He had to have armed escorts. And everything,
right.
And at the end of the day, with what the chunk that Uncle Sam wants from his income, it'll be like he didn't make anything.
That might be the case. Most often people go to work in foreign countries because the wages that they get are much higher than they could get here for the same kind of work. They get hazard pay and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. I think he thought it was going to be cool, and it wasn't as cool as he thought it was.
Yeah, well, that's usually the case. That's usually the case.
So what are the most popular countries that have these reciprocal agreements in place that are desirous for people to put their money in?
Well, that depends on why they're putting their money there. If they want to take advantage of the reciprocal tax treaty in order to minimize taxes on U.S. business income,
mm-hmm.
the best country today is Barbados, which is only from the East Coast at least, it's only a 3 or 4 hour plane ride.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Right, and it's a beautiful country, and the weather is great. And everybody speaks English, and everybody is very civilized, and they like Americans. The United States has these reciprocal tax treaties with Ireland, Pakistan, and Barbados, as far as I remember. I think maybe Hungary also. If you're putting your money overseas for other purposes other than to take advantage of the reciprocal tax treaty on U.S. business income, if you're putting it overseas for asset protection, then there's a whole list of criteria that you want to look at. I mean, you want the law of the country to be favorable for an asset protection plan. In other words, you want strong asset protection laws in the country. You want a good legal system in that country that will enforce those asset protection laws. You want a strong and reliable banking infrastructure. You want a good telecommunications infrastructure so that you can look at the accounts, you know, on, by internet and not have problems trying to call your trustee by telephone or send faxes. You want a country that is safe politically, socially, economically stable. You don't want to sleep with one eye open because you protected your money from your creditor, but you worried about a revolution or riots in the foreign country.
Yeah.
Okay, so once you go through a whole list of criteria, there are, oh, a half a dozen good countries in the world. And which one you use will depend on your specific situation and on how much money you're going to put there, because the trustee fees and the trust fees and so on will vary from country to country. So if you're only putting $150,000 overseas, you want to do it at, you know, with the least expense, you'll go to one of the better Caribbean jurisdictions. Belize is a very good jurisdiction. Antigua is an excellent jurisdiction. I like Antigua especially because we wrote the asset protection laws and the trust laws for the government of Antigua. If you're putting a large amount of money so that a few more thousand dollars in trustee fees doesn't matter to you, I would be looking at Liechtenstein in Europe because it's got 450 years of political, economic, and social stability.
Now, what about Prague? I know a friend of mine always liked Prague for his banking. He felt like it was more favorable for what he was doing, I guess.
Well, again, everybody's situation is different. Prague is not a country that I would use for asset protection or for tax planning. First of all, you need to, for asset protection, you need to avoid any country that is a signatory to the Lugano Convention on the Recognition of Foreign Judgments. That's an international treaty that most countries have signed, which says we will recognize the judgments of the other countries that have signed this treaty.
Ah, so Prague is on that list?
Czechoslovakia, yes. The Czech Republic is on that list.
Okay. Now, with the advent of the internet, does that eliminate the need? You hear people say, oh, I'm going to go visit my money. Should you still go visit your money?
You can if you want to. There are some clients, especially those that have had no exposure or experience in foreign countries, that I tell them it's a very good idea for you to go, you know, get on a plane and take a long weekend vacation in the foreign country that you're going to set up your trust in just so that you can kick the tires, just so that you can come back feeling comfortable with what you're doing. You meet the trustee face-to-face. You walk into the bank and see it's a real bank and not a, you know, a thatched hut. you'll get a comfort level. You'll be able to sleep better at night. Other people don't need to do that. They've been there. They've been to other countries. They know that there's a world outside the United States. And in that case, no, you don't have to go there to, quote, visit your money. You can visit your money online every night.
Now, you mentioned meet the trustee face-to-face. So how does one go about picking a trustee? Clearly there's always a benefit in using a facilitator. You wouldn't want to do one of those online packages. But do attorneys like yourself go out and build these relationships with trustees in foreign countries?
Absolutely. We vet our trustees. We vet our banks. We do a very careful due diligence on every person and every institution that we would introduce to our clients.
Have you ever had to change a bank or a trustee before?
Yes. Not a trustee, but a bank. We monitor the banks that our clients are involved with. We monitor their financial condition very closely. The minute that we see that a bank's financial condition is starting to deteriorate, we will alert our clients that they should move the, or the trustees, that they should move the accounts.
Mm-hmm.
For example, a few years ago, I don't know if you remember, but there was a big Ponzi scheme fraud scandal involving Alan Sanford out of Texas. And a lot of people had invested their money with him through an Antiguan bank that he had set up. And they had bought CDs in the bank and so on. And when he went bankrupt and the whole Ponzi scheme got exposed, people got scared, and not just about his bank, but there was a run on a number of Antiguan banks that decreased their deposits significantly. Well, we were able, in advance of that, to notify the clients that we had that were banking in Antigua that they should transfer their accounts because of the potential deterioration of financial stability of the banks. The truth is, none of the Antiguan banks failed. Every Antiguan bank remained solvent and honored all of its obligations, and all the deposits remained safe. The Antiguan Banking Association and the government of Antigua got together and said, we're going to protect everybody's money. The banks here are not going to fail. And they did a very good job of it. But the point is that our clients didn't have to worry whether that was going to happen.
Okay. Now, in addition to protection, are these people making money on their money? They're probably not making a killing, or are they?
Well, that depends.
Again, on the purpose of what you're doing?
There is an entire spectrum of investments available overseas, just as there is here in the United States. There are many investments available overseas that are not available in the United States. How you invest your money, or how the trustee invests your money, and he will invest according to your recommendations or suggestions, depends on how much money you're making. You can have it sitting in a foreign bank account earning 0.1%, or you can have it invested in euro bonds, in the London stock market, in every kind of investment that you might have available over here, and then some. And be making, you know, I have clients that are making 8-9% on their money in this environment.
That's fabulous, to be able to receive protection and be able to accumulate interest too is kind of a cool thing, because I wasn't sure if you were trading off the asset or the interest for the asset protection. So that's kind of nice that you can have both.
First of all, let's remember that that 8-9% in many cases is being earned tax-free. But look, I encourage, I don't give clients investment advice. I'm a great lawyer and a terrible investor. Clients get investment advice from investment managers and advisors that specialize in overseas investments. Having said that, many clients do very, very well on their foreign investments. I encourage clients to look at principal-protected investments. There are investments out there that say if you keep your money in here for 5 years, no matter what happens in the stock market in the U.S. or any place else in the world, you will never lose your principal. Whether you get 8% interest or 5% interest or 40% interest will depend on the value of the investment when you cash out, but no matter what happens, it will never go down below what you put in.
Well, that's a level of comfort for a lot of people, especially in today's day and age where so many boomers took such a big hit and didn't have the patience and intestinal fortitude to hang in the market, and they sold everything.
Right.
It was the lowest. And now they're forced with going back to work and stuff like that, and perhaps something like this might have made all the difference.
Sure.
For them financially.
Absolutely. Absolutely. People have to decide whether or not it's worth it to maybe make a point or two less interest in order to be guaranteed that they're not going to lose.
Mm-hmm. And everybody loves that word, guarantee.
Yeah.
So that's a big thing.
Yes.
So now, how does internet asset protection planning work? Is it just like going to an estate planning lawyer and you pay a fee and then you set it up and then you pay another fee to monitor it? Or is it like your investment advisor who takes a percentage of earnings? How is that structured for people that are interested?
You go to a lawyer who specializes in asset protection. This is a very esoteric and specialized field. So your real estate lawyer or your typical regular estate planning lawyer will typically not have that kind of expertise. You find an asset protection lawyer. You pay the lawyer, usually, and I can't speak for other attorneys. I charge clients a flat fee for setting all of this up from A to Z, recommending the proper trustee, recommending the proper jurisdiction, drafting the trust or drafting the corporate documents, depending on the entity that we're going to use, having the trust or the corporation registered in the foreign jurisdiction, setting up the bank accounts, everything from A to Z, ready for them to transfer their funds over. They will pay an initial trustee fee and trust registration fee, for example, so that they know exactly what this is costing them. Flat fee, not by the hour, the meter doesn't run.
Mm-hmm.
They will have an annual charge after that, typically to re-register the trust every year and to pay the trustee for his services every year. And that's directly to the foreign trustee and the foreign government. Usually, once it's all set up and going, they don't need me anymore.
Mm-hmm. And what about that vetting process, should that change? Is that just a courtesy phone call?
Yes.
Oh, that's kind of cool. Well, it's been so interesting having a conversation with you today on the show, and I'm sorry our time is coming to a close, but if there's one thing that you could leave the listeners with that are contemplating international asset protection or have thought about, do I stay domestic or do I go offshore, what final thoughts would you like to leave our listeners with?
Don't do it yourself. This is a complicated process. There are very complicated laws and, let's call them, landmines or traps that you don't want to fall into.
Mm-hmm.
If you do it yourself, hire an experienced, accredited asset protection or international tax attorney who can guide you along the way so that you get where you want to go to, but you do it in a tax-compliant and legal manner. You don't hide your money. That doesn't work. Your money is protected, if you will, by a 6-inch thick, totally transparent, bulletproof shield.
I like that. Well, thank you so much for your time today. If folks wanted to get together with you, how can they find you, Kenneth?
Our internet site is www.assetlawyer.com.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you dropping by on a Saturday to join us. And for those of you that don't have pencil and paper handy, as always, we have links from our show guests to their websites on our website at unlockyourwealth.com. Stay tuned for our final segment and this week's Key in the Keys to Riches Financial Wellness series. I'm Heather Wagenhals. Stay tuned for more after this.
Hey, this is Coca Brown from the hit radio show, The Truth with Coca Brown on HollywoodOutlaws.com radio. And you're listening to me on Heather Wagenhals, Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Hi, it's Marty Logan here from the Top Gun Sales Academy. You know, one thing I've learned over the years is that the most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Naturally, Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, and Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside. They knew they could easily become. Truly, financial coaching could be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. That toll-free number again is 1-866-966-9420 or simply visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, industries.com. Like, go there, totally!
Even in today's economy, I, Count Dracula, have had to foreclose on my castle. But because of Heather Wagonhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, I have not only reacquired my castle, but I have opened a resort for the undead. Tune in to Heather Wagonhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She's the only one not trying to suck you dry.
Greetings and salutations, everyone. Welcome back to the broadcast. You have been listening to Kenneth Rubenstein and how exciting offshore investments. I learned so much, and I'm very aware of how it works, and I still learn so much. I hope you enjoyed having him on as a guest. I think we'll probably have to have him back for some more specific and targeted questions. He was really cool. But now it is time for the Keys to Riches Financial Wellness Series. For those of you who are joining us for the first time, the Keys to Riches is a baker's dozen of financial concepts that not only teach you how to think like the rich and be in control of your own money, but also gives you specific techniques to create or fix your credit, reduce debt, save and invest, all while transforming your current financial habits into healthy money management skills. And we do that 1 week at a time, one key at a time. And we are on our next key, our second key in the Keys to Riches Financial Wellness Series, Take Action, Make Assessment. And we're going green today. What do I mean by that? Green is in money? No, green is like organic green. We're going to do an organic assessment. That's the first action step we're going to take, is we're going to start assessing where we are. Because unless we know where we are, we can't determine how close or far away from it is that we want to go. And we can't effectively plan the road to get there either. So we must do an organic assessment. And I say organic assessment, as so many people get hung up in this budget thing. I got to have a budget. I need to go on a budget. And that's one of our keys, is break the budget. And the problem with budgeting is it's just like dieting. We think we got to go on to and off of. And what we do with our financial wellness series is we create a healthy savings and spending plan to begin with. But we can't do that until we know where we are. And how do we know where we are? Well, we've got to make an assessment of where we are. If you have a family of four and you think you're going to get away with spending $100 a month on grocery, you're nuts. Absolutely nuts. But that's what people do. Oh, I'm going to cut my grocery bill back to $100. That may not even be totally realistic. How do we know what to cut or where to cut? And there's a bigger underlying factor that we always forget about when it comes to finances, is we believe in our heart of hearts that we're truly logical beings that use reason and logic to make our decisions. But we are not logical beings that use reason. We are emotional creatures that use reason and logic to justify our bad behavior after the fact. And that's what we are as people. We are not the other way around. That's why so many people can't get on the groove, because they are so driven by emotion, more so than others. But we all are driven by emotion. And then the patterning that we have in place as children predicate the decisions that we make each and every day, each and every moment of our lives. So we're going to do this assessment, and the way we're going to do this is all you're going to do for the next 6 weeks until we get to the break the budget key, where I'll tell you what we're going to do with it, is you're going to get a big manila envelope, a 9x12, like you'd be sending a big full-size paper to someone. And in this, all you were going to do is put your receipts for everything you spend money on. If you spend cash, like you give a kid an allowance, or you go to a vending machine, or you pay for a paper, or you use cash out of your wallet at a flea market where a receipt is not issued, you need to write one up on a scrap of paper and shove it in this envelope. Do not look at the contents of this envelope for the next 6 weeks. We are going to organically assess what we're doing. Now, this mere action of shoving these receipts and having to write out the ones that we don't get issued receipts is going to raise our consciousness a bit about what we're doing with money. But since we're not tallying it up, since we're not looking at it, because we're going to look at it in a different way at the end of our assessment period than you think, it's going to be the most organic, natural look at what we're doing with our money, not just how much, because the how much is not nearly as important as the when and the why. And that will all unfold on the Break the Budget Key. The when and the why mean more to our ability to create a healthy savings and spending plan than anything. So that's what you are going to do. Your first action that you are going to take is to begin your assessment phase. So for this week's key on Take Action, Make Assessment, our nuts and bolts for this week, our key statement is, I know that I must assess the when and why I'm spending my money so I can come up with the how to make my day-to-day choices match my short and long-term goals. Our key affirmation this week is, I am successful at assessing my current financial state. So what you are going to do is say these affirmations several times throughout the day, because what we think about, we bring about. We're going to say them at night before we go to bed, so our subconscious mind creates new neural pathways while we sleep to create what it is we truly desire in our lives. Then when we wake up, the first thing we're going to do is say our affirmations again out loud to ourselves. And any time throughout the day that we encounter negativity, we are going to whip out our affirmation sheet, and we are going to refocus our conscious mind on our higher purpose of the day. It's not to argue with people. It's not to drop the kids off at school and take somebody to practice and pick up dry cleaning. Is to create freedom of choice for you and your family, and that starts with financial wellness. And what we think about, we bring about. So we want to redirect our focus onto the positive things that we are trying to put forth in our lives. And our key action item for this week is to get a 9x12 envelope, or big, if you're a big spender or have a large family and there are several receipts and you're going to collect these receipts. You're not going to look at them. You're not going to tally them. You're not going to write them down. If you're not issued a receipt, you're going to make another one. We're not making any judgments. We're not making any decisions. You might be aware of what's going on, but do not change your patterns. And we're just going to continue to do what we do for just a little bit while longer so we can see what it is that's going on. Because then and only then can we fully determine what course of action we can take to accomplish our stated goals. Thank you so much for joining us this week. I have had an incredible time this show. Remember to tune into our Tuesday show, where we are going to learn how to create our day. Our midweek update next week is generic versus brand names. Do we or don't we go for the label? And next week's Key Dreams with Deadlines, that's where the fun begins. We get to start planning what it is we truly desire in our lives so we can figure out the course of action to get us there the quickest. I want to thank both of my guests, both Laura Fortang and Kenneth Rubenstein, for joining us and sharing with us today. For all of this, plus this week's strategy on how to set up your assessment envelope, visit our website at www.unlockyourwealth.com. I'm Heather Wagenhall, thanking you for joining us. Be sure to go vote for us at shortyawards.com/unlockyrwealth. And finally, financial freedom can be yours at www.unlockyourwealth.com. Thanks for joining us, and make it a millionaire day.